myself out.
I am afraid of.
I'm terrified and paralyzed by.
I am deathly afraid of.
Welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast with your host, me, Ryan Perio. Hello, and welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Perio. This week, my guest is author and podcaster Mac Bechtel, host of the Book Brilliant podcast, as well as an author of the suspense novel Sleep, a book about sleep paralysis. It's a real suspense novel. It's his first. We talk about that, how he got into authorship, as well as the Book Brilliant podcast, and then we get into his fear of demons. It's a very interesting fear rooted in faith and how he's used his faith and knowledge to overcome that fear. So let's get into that interview right now with Mac Bechtel. All right, my guest this week is author and podcast host of the Book Brilliant podcast, Mac Bechtel. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing great. It's great for you to have me on today. I really appreciate it.
What's the weather like in Nebraska today?
It's good. It's not bad. The outside temp is about probably in the 70s today, so not bad. We'll see if it snows before Halloween. Hopefully not. But yeah, it's all right today.
Is that always a threat? Like, is there snow before Halloween?
It's happened enough. I mean, one year they had to basically cancel Halloween and like push it back because of snow. So
that would
so yeah, probably not as bad in Texas. But yeah, I mean, like last year we had a pretty dry winter, so it wasn't too bad. But we've had like Thanksgiving get snowed out, things like that, and that always kind of sucks because it just ruins the fall.
Yeah, your season gets cut short.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't like that. So.
I just couldn't imagine being snowed in for Halloween. Like, I feel like just the sadness of kids just like with their costumes ready to go and unable to do anything.
Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, and we can maybe this ties into this stuff, but like I didn't do Halloween when I was a kid. My parents weren't into that. So for me, it was never a big deal. But it was funny for all the other kids that would bitch about it because it didn't make a difference to me one way or the other. So, but yeah, it's a good day today. People won't be able to see this on video, but I was just at my niece's 10-year birthday party at my brother's place. So before I left, I grabbed a bunch of those hugs, drinks, those juices or whatever. So I'm going to be chugging on those throughout this podcast.
Feel free. That is. Those are a forbidden, you forget like kids stuff, like how good some of that stuff actually tastes. It's like, oh man, it just takes you back.
Oh, I haven't had one of these in like 10 or 15 years. It's been a long time, but I saw them there and I was like, I got to try this. And so, yeah, it was better than I remembered even. So, yeah.
So let's start with your podcast. You do a podcast called Book Brilliant, which behind you, I guess for the listenership, since I don't do a video podcast, there is just a wall of books of all kinds, it looks like, not even just scary novels, but all novels in general.
Yeah, I started the Book Brilliant podcast because I have a phobia of books. I'm just kidding. I started the Book Brilliant podcast just because I liked talking to people about what their favorite books were, and when I would meet people, I would want to know what their favorite books were. And so it started off as a website. And then there was this musician that was coming into Nebraska, and I kind of wanted to meet him, but I didn't want to just go to the show type of a thing. And so I reached out to his agent and I said, hey, I'm doing this thing where I'm doing like a podcast now, or like long form interviews, you know, would he do it? And if he would have said no, I wouldn't have probably started the podcast, but he said yeah. So then boom, I decided to go for it. And then since then I've been able to meet super interesting people. It's something I kind of do when I want to do it, or if I reach out to the people and they're available. So I'm not super consistent with it right now. But when the episodes do come out, they definitely mean something to me. So
that's awesome. I mean, and that's all you can ask for as a podcast, is that you have a passion behind it, because if you do it too frequently, then that passion just kind of burns out, and then you're left with a not quality content, I would say. Then you're just kind of just going through motions.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I'm lucky that everybody that I've had on the podcast has been an awesome person, and I was excited to talk to them. Not everybody, when I first was starting it up, I was reaching out to people who I was kind of like, I don't even know if I want to talk to this person. And I'm honestly happy that those ones don't work out, because it's much better to talk to the people you actually want to talk to, you know?
Absolutely. And it's also fun I love meeting just different people, you know, just because of the way my podcast works, it's the fear is more highlighted than the person. Yeah. So I didn't want to do something comedy where it's only comedians. So once I go through all my comedian friend base, it's like, okay, well, now we're kind of stretched for guests.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. There's so many podcasts out there that it's okay to start one, you know, but but you want to have a bit of a unique spin on it. Or, I mean, honestly, I don't think there's anything wrong with if you get something out of it, you know, you just got to know why you're doing it, you know? So, but yeah, that's been a cool thing. Bookbrilliant.com. I'm on, most social medias as either Book Brilliant or B Book Brilliant. Started doing that. But kind of along this past year, I figured out that I like to write. And I wrote this book called Sleep, which is about sleep paralysis. And, you know, kind of ties into, I guess, what my what the fear is that I've kind of struggled with my whole life. If you want to get into that.
Absolutely. I was going to get into your book next, since I was like talking about favorite authors. Is like, who inspired you? Who inspires your writing? Who has been like the author that you look at that you've like kind of maybe kind of taken pieces of?
Yeah. Well, so that's a really good question. All these books behind me that you can see are all are all like nonfiction. I hardly read fiction that much, right? And my book is a fictional book. I'm not really into Stephen King, you know, to be honest. The three books that I probably drew the most from fiction wise for this book was Rosemary's Baby, The Exorcist, and then I read Jaws as well, kind of during the process of writing this. But my favorite authors, you know, Ryan Holiday, Robert Greene, Tucker Max always makes me laugh. Clay Martin, who's become a friend of mine, he's an amazing writer, fiction and nonfiction, which is hard to do. Read all of Clay's books, like all of them, especially his nonfiction. And then Jack Deere, I got to interview him on my podcast. That interview is probably not the best. He goes over stuff that he hasn't talked about a lot, but as far as like from my side of things, it wasn't the best because I was so nervous to talk to Jack.
I can't imagine. But it's such a cool feeling. Like, it's like you try to keep it normal for your heroes, but it's so hard not to just be like fanboy out and be like, oh my gosh, like you kind of blank a little bit because you're so just mesmerized by the fact that this person that I admire, that I've looked up to, is like interacting with me. And it's almost like a date. Like, it's almost like that date feeling, like, oh my God, do they like me? Am I making them uncomfortable?
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly what it's like, dude. I've interviewed the bassist from Nickelback a couple times. And I had his poster on my wall when I was like in high school. And so when I'm like talking to him, I'm trying to kind of like taper it down a little bit, because I didn't want to be like weird. But he is such a normal dude that he made it like really easy to talk to. Just super, super easy guy to talk to. But like Jack Deere, you know, Jackson is 70s, you know, he's an older guy on a computer. And I was just, you know, Jack is a super nice guy and everything, but I was just, pretty in my head on that one. So, yeah.
Was he like the old man on the computer? Like, you just talked to Jack's chin for like the majority of the interview?
It actually wasn't like that. And it might've been unfair for me to even mention that, but he was just kind of, the thing that threw me off was like, for instance, like Mike from Nickelback, or a lot of like musicians that I talk to, like they're really good at like transitioning and like kind of keeping things going along. And what threw me off with Jack is like, he's a super, super smart, like he's like a biblical scholar, like can speak all these different ancient languages and stuff like that. And so, you know, he would basically just answer my question and then he would just kind of wait for the next question. And so in my mind, the pause was like 30 seconds between questions. And then in reality, like when I went back and listened to it, like you can't even tell, but it goes back to being so in my head that I made it worse than it, then I beat myself up over it. Like, oh, that was awkward. And when I listened to it, I was like, it's really not that bad.
That was
a cool experience though, because I spent like 5 years trying to get in touch with him. So again, that's where like having a podcast, if anybody thinking about doing it, you know, come up with an interesting like way to do it, something a little bit different. But yeah, like reaching out to people that you look up to, I always tell people to do it. Like, it's for the most part, like it's worked out well for me, you know, and I've made some cool friendships along the way.
Absolutely. And so, like you said, you become an author. So what inspired you to put pen to paper, or I guess hand to keyboard?
So I wrote a script earlier this year. And I figured out I like to write scripts, and I wrote a couple of them, and I kind of quickly realized, like, I'm in Nebraska. I don't know anybody who can make movies. Like, movies have been made here, and I guarantee there's more of a film scene here than most people would expect. But I realized, like, well, I'm not just going to like write this script and get it made without, you know, being around the people who do that kind of thing. And so I kind of did a couple things. For one, I started acting in short films, kind of building up my network of people around me. But then the other thing was I was kind of like constantly, I was trying to think, I need to figure out a way where I can make a movie with like no money, but still have it be a really good movie. And I was watching a documentary about sleep paralysis, which has kind of just always intrigued me. And I thought, hey, that'd probably be kind of cheap, right? Like most of it would be in the dark. So, you know, your budget for props and costumes doesn't need to be that much because it's going to be dark anyway. And so I thought about it, and then I talked to my pastor and I was like, dude, I don't know. Is this like something you think might be worth doing? And I kind of told him where I was thinking about going with it. And he said, yeah, that sounds interesting to me. So I wrote the script, and then I converted the script from the script to the book, basically. But initially, like, I didn't really want to write it, because like, while I thought it might be an interesting idea, I was like totally convinced that I was going to have really bad sleep paralysis if I were to write this. So I've had like pretty mild sleep paralysis, but I've had friends and family who have had it like horrible. And again, it goes back to kind of just like this lifelong fear of demons that I've had. Mm-hmm. And so I really didn't want to write it. But I just thought the story was too compelling to not do it. And so, that's honestly kind of how it started.
That's awesome. And it's really cool that you're very intentional with way you approached it. Like, you're like, let me just ask around. Let me just really, you know, dig around and find people that have really had it and get their accounts of what they experienced, and try and put yourself in that situation as an author, you know, to try to tell this story. Is okay, you kind of put yourself in the first person and the second person.
Yeah, it was, you know, talking about research for it, like, I've had some mild stuff. And so that's the first couple of chapters, or the first couple like sleep paralysis things that he's had is what I've had. But when it gets kind of darker and scarier and stuff like that, how I kind of went about it was I read multiple books on sleep paralysis. I read scholarly studies about it. One of the more interesting ones was, I think they were in like Turkey. There was like a college or a university there that did a study on it where they interviewed Muslims about sleep paralysis. And then I also read hundreds of testimonies, and then I interviewed people that I trusted too who had it, because what I wanted to do was be like realistic with it. I didn't want to underplay it, and I didn't want to overplay it either. And so if you read this book, you know, you may depend, and you've never had it, you're going to have an open mind. If you've had it, or you've had it frequently, you know, you may say, well, mine's different, or this would never happen. But trust me, what I wrote in this book, if it's in the book, I believe it's possible to have happen. You know, the main character is a metalhead. And so what I tell people is like, the probably the most unrealistic part of the book is the wide variety of music that the main character listens to, because metalheads tend to be pretty, like, they pretty much go to their subgenre and stick there. So outside of that, I feel like that's the most unrealistic part of the book.
I would say that I, as a metal listener myself, I've also kind of adapted because I've lived with other people that were not metalheads. So I've kind of osmosised what they listened to, which was like punk, ska, you know, then I got into breakdancing, which pulled me into hip hop and underground hip hop. And so I have like this, over my 45 years of living, I have this huge, I guess, allotment of music now that I've listened to, along with early 80s and 90s when I was like, you know, in eighth grade, you know, the Phil Collins and stuff like that as well.
Nice.
And so it is kind of, it could be, you know, in some ways, yes, you know, when it's a young metalhead, you kind of can say that, but if they're older, then you can say, you know, as somebody that's kind of evolved into music and just kind of opened their mind to other genres that maybe,
yes,
you know, that could, that's possible.
Yeah. No, I think that is a very valid point, because you're right. If you talk to older metalheads, they have a wider palate, you would say. What kind of metal did you like?
I was mostly Roadrunner records. Like, I loved everything Roadrunner. Like, I would, Shadows Fall, you know, I would listen to Machine Head.
Yeah.
Fear Factory.
Yeah.
Let's see, I was trying to think of some of the Earache, Entombed, you know, some of the Swedish, like Entombed.
Yeah.
Gosh, it's all blanking on me because I would just listen to now. It's like the Coheed, Cambria.
Yeah. Well, dude, I mean, you may or may not like Nickelback, but you got to give them props because they kept the lights on at Roadrunner for a very long time, whether people want to admit that or not. That I really believe that band saved that record label.
Oh, yeah. Autumn to Ashes. And, you know, they had everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good record. That's I don't know if you've ever listened to King 810 before. But I believe they were signed to Roadrunner, but I had interviewed David Gunn, not for my podcast, but for something else on the website. And that was pretty cool. But I think that's who they were signed to, was Roadrunner as well. But that's a good record label.
Yeah, they always seem to have like quality musicians. Like, it was just quality metal. Like, you know, even what I would consider not metal, but more heavy rock, like Autumn to Ashes and, you know, things like that. They were just really, you know, really fascinating, you know, just really good acts. And it was just, you would just find, and then we would go to like the Roadrunner concerts and stuff where Killswitch Engage and all these bands would just rotate being the headliner, God forbid. And it was a wild scene. Like, I'm not the biggest guy, so I did not like the live concert experience at metal shows as much as I, you know, would like to. Just because it gets very chaotic. Like, there's a lot of
That's exactly why, like, I wanted to see King 810. Like, I want to see him live, but I also don't want to get punched in the back of the head. So it's like this, you know, I know a dude who, like, when Mayhem was touring the United States, I know a guy, actually use it as a bit in this book, but he went to this Mayhem show, and I'm like, you know, dude, what was it like? And he's like, I kind of hung out in the back, and he's like, just a bunch of dudes in their 50s. And then I kind of did the math, and I was like, oh yeah, like Mayhem was, yeah, like their time would have been like what, the late 80s, early 90s. So yeah, that actually makes sense. I was expecting it to be a bunch of like young satanic dudes, but nope, just guys in their 50s.
Yeah. Mayhem, Venom,
Gorgoroth.
Yeah. All the old.
Yeah. The Norwegian scene, like the black metal has been like very intriguing to me as well. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of mixed it. I mixed that interest into this book because, like I said, I made the lead singer a metalhead. So like I purposely kind of go down like rabbit holes, which some people have told me, they're like, dude, on some of your parts where you're talking about like metal, my eyes kind of gloss over and I skim it. And I'm like, I knew that that's how that was going to be, but I just wanted to put it in the book because there's only one person that makes decisions around here, and that's me. And I wanted it to be in the book, but I just thought it would be a fun thing to like write about. So I kept it in there. So metalheads might get a kick out of it. People who are maybe intrigued by metal might get a kick out of it. And if not, I guess skim over the two paragraphs where I talk about mayhem. So
I just think it's, if, you know, it gives people an idea, you know, you've got to speak from your truth. And so if, you know, as a metal fan, you will talk about metal music and stuff to kind of let them know, hey, this is what the main character is listening to. This is, you know, maybe they go online to YouTube and download a Mayhem song or something just to kind of get an idea.
Yeah, exactly. I, you know, everything, it's one of those things too, like when you write a book, and this should be obvious, I guess, but like, I don't agree with everything that I write in there. So like, just because like a character does it doesn't mean I think like it's a cool thing or it's the right thing, right? And so what I did want to make sure I did though, was if I'm having them write about something and the, and I'm thinking like, ah, I don't think this is really like, this is not what I would do, but this is what the character is going to do. I wanted to make sure that I portrayed it as accurately as possible. So, you know, whether you're a metalhead or whatever, as long as you read it and didn't feel like it was it wasn't offensive. Like it wasn't like I didn't want people to think like this guy didn't do his research here, so it comes off as like cheap or half-assed or whatever. You know, I try to prevent that, you know, as much as possible. So, so I, you know what I mean? I had fun though, like going down. Cause like I do listen to a lot of stuff. I don't predominantly just listen to metal. Right. So, but I've just been fascinated by the characters and the behind the scenes of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it was really fun to, you know, to go down that rabbit hole. I've got a couple other book ideas, and I'm trying to figure out which one I'm going to go to first, but the one I'm leaning towards is about prison. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like super thrilled about that. Like I am really, I've always been interested in like Locked Up and all those shows. And I know dudes who have been in prison. So I'm really excited that like, if this is what I pursue to write next, like I'm going to go down this prison rabbit hole, but I'm trying to get a tour lined up with like a prison around me. Mm-hmm. And the first prison I wrote to and asked said they wouldn't do it. So I'm trying to figure out how to get in. So right now, I guess you could say I'm trying to figure out how to get into prison. So,
okay. Well, there are ways, but
yeah, it's just the getting out when I want to part, I guess. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the fun part. Like the writing a book, like I always thought I was going to write nonfiction because that's mostly what I read, but I can never think of a nonfiction thing, like something that I was really going to want to do that I had the chance to. Like there's a biography by a musician that I've always wanted to write, but I like know his friends and stuff like that. And they're like, dude, his family's probably not going to like, okay, you're writing this book. So it's like, all right, well, I want the family's okay. Not that I have to legally, but because I want to do it the right way. But if you're going to write a book or whatever, it's got to be about something that you're going to look forward to writing. So, you know, with like sleep paralysis, always been interested in that. And I've always been interested in metal. So I incorporated that into it. You know, with the next book I write about prison, again, I've always, you know, thought Locked Up was an interesting show. And I've always watched documentaries and stuff. And I don't know where you're at in tech. Or where would you say you're at?
Dallas.
You're at Dallas. Yeah. So, my grandma was a nurse at the Huntsville prison, that one where they execute like the most prisoners anywhere in America. She was a nurse there for a while. And so like, I've watched documentaries about that prison, too, just because it's interesting. And, to me, because of my grandma, you know? So yeah, I would say if you're going to write a book, just make sure that you care about what you're writing about. So you do it the right way.
So are your next books also going to be kind of in that horror kind of suspense kind of vein, or are you going to try to branch out to different?
So I've got one that'll be, I carry on my phone. I've got like on my notes on my iPhone, I've got a thing that just says book ideas, and it's literally like 50 ideas, but one of them is going to be a comedy. I'm going to kind of co-write it with a guy that I used to work with. We used to work at a beer wholesaler. And so we were going to write a comedy book about being in the beer business, just because like, and we're probably going to Ernest Hemingway it. So we're just going to write true stories, but change names and then string it to a fictional book. So that's one that I've been thinking about. The prison one is going to be, I would consider it a thriller, but I could easily see why it could fall into the horror category.
Yeah.
And then another book that I'm thinking about doing would be thriller as well. So not necessarily horror, but exciting. Yeah. And the thriller aspect of it.
I mean, you could almost take your character from this book and then maybe perhaps move him to a prison to have what would be like to have sleep paralysis while you're a prisoner.
Yeah. Dude, that's not, honestly, that's not a bad idea. Like if I ever wanted to do a sequel or something like that, I mean, you could even take, you know, the sleep paralysis thing. You could do so much with it. That's why, and that's, I'm wearing like a Nightmare on Elm Street shirt.
Yes.
Kind of as a joke here. I mean, these movies freak me out more than any of the classic ones, but, my understanding is like, from what I've read was Freddy Krueger kind of came out of that whole like sleep paralysis thing. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's like a very accurate portrayal of it, but yeah. Yeah.
So your fear is very interesting. You're afraid of demons, and that's such an interesting that you kind of would then go to the horror and fear, I guess, ideology for your first book. What is it about demons and stuff that kind of, I guess, frightens you?
Yeah, I mean, when you first had kind of reached out, I said, well, it could be demons or my fear of heights, which, you know, my fear of heights basically starts and stops at the fact that my dad was a lineman and he also climbed like telephone poles. So he had zero fear of or not telephone poles, but like the satellite poles that are like, mm-hmm. I don't know, 1,000 feet up or whatever. So my dad's got zero fear of heights. So whenever I was a kid, if I ever looked over a ledge, my dad would like kind of jump scare me, like grab me and do that. And so to this day, when I look over a ledge, I'm afraid that someone's going to like do that to me. So, you know, that's kind of why I have that. And then, you know, obviously like, yeah, I've got the typical fears of life of, you know, losing loved ones or, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like failing, things like that. When I was in high school, I had this like phobia of tornadoes. Mm-hmm. There was a really bad tornado that came through here that killed like Boy Scouts. It's kind of like it's remembered for that. And when that storm came through, my mom calls me and she's like, I was over at my friend's house and she's like, you need to ride your bike home, which is like the worst thing you could do is like leave. I was in a basement at my friend's house and the worst thing they could have had me do is ride my bike home. So I rode my bike home in this storm and it was terrifying and it developed this fear of tornadoes. And so when I was like 16, I took a storm spotters class mm-hmm. and I learned about storms and that really took that fear away. And so I kind of like to dive headfirst into my fears and learn more about them. Yeah. But my whole life, I was plagued just by this weird fear of demons. And it's weird because it probably started when I was about 4. Mm-hmm. My dad told me about, there is this pastor from the 1800s. His name was Smith Wigglesworth. And my dad told me, you know, Smith Wigglesworth once woke up and Satan was in his room and he was sitting on his bed and Smith Wigglesworth just like turned around and went back to sleep. And I think he was trying to tell me that story is like a comforting thing. Like you don't have anything to be afraid of, but instead what it did was every time I woke up my entire childhood, I was afraid that when I woke up, Satan was going to be sitting on my bed. And so, I remember just like as a kid, like in preschool, like age, like talking to like other little kids about the devil and stuff like that. And to me, that's just weird because like I have a 4-year-old son and mm-hmm. he doesn't do that. Like he goes to church and we read him Bible stories and whatever, but like he doesn't know anything about the devil. But I went to this church that like, I wouldn't consider it, like, I don't think that they necessarily deserve the term charismatic, mm-hmm. You know, good or bad. I just think that like they would just tell these stories on Sundays and they would just be like they would say like, okay, this past, like this is a real story of what they said once. They're like, okay, like in this past Wednesday at our Bible study, while we were like doing praise and worship, a lady started slithering on the ground like a snake and it took 10 of us to subdue her. And she was speaking in voices that weren't hers, saying if we let her go, she would go rob a bank and then she would give us the money. Right. So when you're a little kid, dude, like that, like, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like that's terrifying. So, I mean, I've been trying to think of if I want to hold back or if I want to go off the rails and just like, you know, lay out some of the stories that I've heard that have caused this. So I don't know. You want me to go hard or you want me to dial it back a little bit?
You can go hard. I just laugh because it's like I feel for your dad because he's like everything he's done has just traumatized you more and more.
Yeah, I know. I just saw him at the birthday party. We got a good relationship though. So, but yeah, man, that was just kind of his sense of humor, I guess. But anyway, you know, so like, when I was, I would always want to like sleep in my parents' room.
Mm-hmm.
And they would always be like, why, like, what are you afraid of? And the obvious answer is I'm afraid of the stories that dad told me. but I would say, I was afraid of Scooby-Doo or whatever. But yeah, you know, I would be in this church and they would say like, they would tell stories of like old ladies who are possessed by demons that would like pick up like a big screen TV and chuck it. Just stuff like that. And so that scared me. And then, like when I was a kid and I learned about this, like doing stuff for this book was like over summer break. Like there's an age gap between my siblings and I. So a lot of my childhood is almost like I was like an only child because mm-hmm. I was the only child in the home for a lot of my childhood. So on like summer break, or if I was just by myself at home, I remember like as a kid, I'd be playing with toys and I would like, I felt like something was watching me and I could like point to where I thought it was. Like I could point over and say like, there's mm-hmm. something over there, like watching me. And it would bother me to the point, like sometimes I would stop playing and I would just go sit on my bed. Cause I felt like I would be out of like view for whatever I thought it was. Now, when I look back at that as an adult, I just thought like, well, I was just a dramatic kid with some creativity, you know, I just kind of didn't think anything of it, but I was doing research for this book and I was interviewing a guy who's like kind of an expert on like sleep paralysis stuff. And he was like, yeah, dude, when I was going through it, like, you know, there'd be, I could sense like demons in my house and I could tell you exactly where they were. And he basically had the same thing. Like he had it as an adult, but he had the same thing that like I felt as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, hey, hold on a second. I was like, when I was a kid, I felt like I had that. You think that was real? You think that was like actually something going on there? And he was like, yeah, I definitely do. Iron Maiden kind of sings about it in their song Fear of the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people who suffer from sleep paralysis can talk about it. Like this feeling of like, it's not just that you can sense you're not alone. It's not that. It's deeper than that because it's like you could sit there and say, right there is where I'm sensing something is looking at me from mm-hmm. right there in the room. It's a very weird, very intense, terrifying feeling. So I had that as a kid. Just a lot of afraid to be alone, not because of like I was like I enjoyed being alone because I was super creative. I loved to play with toys and stuff like that. Like that wasn't the problem. I was afraid to be alone because I was afraid that like something was going to get me. Like mm-hmm. that was kind of the constant fear, was like something was going to get me. So yeah, I suffered with that as a child. As I got older, it kind of went away. I kind of like left the church for a few years or whatever, I would say. And when I came back to it, I got baptized, stuff like that. And I was like, all right, I'm going to start going to church again. And I remember like, I would go to these like young adult thing, like after church, and there'd be all the young adults who go to like restaurants, hang out and whatever. And I'd always be like, hey, you guys got any cool demon stories? And everybody'd be like, whoa, no, dude. like they're like afraid to talk about it. And I realized that like, this fear, like, the fear had turned into like a morbid curiosity, like fascination mm-hmm. type of thing. And so I just went down these rabbit holes, like, you know, just reading stuff, reading accounts and things like that. And to be honest, like, you know, I wrote this book, obviously, but I feel like I've kind of come out the other end of it. Like, I don't have, trust me, like, there's every now and then I would like do in the course of this book, like, I would spend like a couple hours reading accounts of sleep paralysis, or I'd spend the night like writing about it. Mm-hmm. And then I would go to bed and I would just be like convinced, like, okay, tonight's the night, like I'm going to see something. And I would have dreams about sleep paralysis. It wasn't sleep paralysis. It was dreams about it. And then, I would like wake up and see a shadow in the room and I'd be like, ah, here it is. And then I'd be like, oh no, that's just the fan. So nothing ever like nothing spooky like happened to me like while reading this book, but like some of the stuff that I would like that I would read about was so bad that I couldn't incorporate it in the book because I wanted to like have something redeeming. Like I wanted to make sure that and I don't know, like probably not a whole lot of horror authors are like this. Like I didn't go for the shock value necessarily. Like I wasn't thinking, and I read the guy from The Exorcist, I guess, kind of said the same thing. Like he wasn't thinking, how do I write a scary book? He just wrote the book. And that's kind of how I was. Like, I want the reader to have the fear of the person who's getting sleep paralysis, but I wasn't trying to think of like, how spooky can I do this? But like, there were some accounts that I would read. I can go into them, but like where I would just read and just be like, geez, dude, like I'm not even gonna put this in the book type mm-hmm. of a thing. So
and that's part of being an author, is that sometimes people you it's just like, you know, a lot of things you can't, we as a, even as a country, we don't get all the information because all the information is just so much and so, you know, so, and it changes so rapidly that you just can't really, there's no real good way to do it. And that even though, yes, yeah, in some instances you feel the public has a right to know this stuff, but you know, not as now you said, knowledge is power, and it's a lot of, it takes, you know, some kind of power, you know, control over that power to say, hey, I need to scale it back just to, because
yeah,
you just can't have all that power, you know, it's too much power for one person to kind of, you know, or to, you know, to, you know, just put in one book or, you know, one account to have that much in. And it's also, you know, it's also like your fascination thing is one of my other interviews. I had an interview with a comic who was afraid of being eaten alive.
Wow.
And, that's, and so his girlfriend was making him watch like this anime series called Attack on Titan, where people are getting eaten by giants on regular basis. And so it's kind of, she told him that if you're afraid of something, it has power over you.
Yeah.
So you seeking knowledge about it kind of takes that power away of being, I guess, feeling powerless against it. So when you have that fear of demons, you're not super powerless because you can, again, use the knowledge of what you've learned about it to say, okay, this is what's, you know, happening. And it kind of puts you at ease a little bit as far as that feeling, instead of just being overwhelmed and panic attacking. And
yeah, absolutely. I'm going to give you and your listeners an exclusive. This is probably the one that bothered me the most. I'll tell you this account. This one bothered me the most. So if you're like impartial to not wanting to hear this kind of stuff, I would maybe skip ahead 30 seconds. But I was doing an interview with my brother, or I was talking to my brother about it, because my brother's had it worse than I did. And he was telling me that he knew this girl that had a horrible life experiences, like had been abused in different ways, you know, and probably a lot of the worst ways somebody could be abused. And she's having sleep paralysis, and my brother was trying to help her, like kind of, hey, this is what I did, this is how you can be helped or whatever. And he said, he goes, how bad is your sleep paralysis? And she said, well, let me, last night I woke up to a demon that looked like my dead brother's corpse fucking me. And my brother was like, okay, yeah, you need to, you really need to like get this, like don't play around with the sleep paralysis, like you need to get this figured out. And I just thought about it, that one really bothered me, because that's just so, like, I believe that the girl's account is real. You know what I mean? Like, you always have to measure if someone's being dramatic or whatever. And like, I would believe that that account is probably real. It just bothered me that, like, it's like, geez, is there, I know we're talking about the devil and stuff, but is there no boundary? You know what I mean? It's like, it's like, seriously, like, you get attacked in the worst ways. And so that one was like pretty extreme, obviously. Like, you're talking about the incubus and the succubus.
Yeah.
The hierarchy of demons, like, it's interesting, but it's kind of not like, I didn't want people to like walk away from this book thinking like demons are awesome or whatever, because like, I don't think that is like, mm-hmm. I know people who try to mess around with like conjuring demons up and stuff like that. Like, it's not a cool thing. It's really not.
Yeah.
I came across, I actually met Erwin Lutzer at a conference once, but he wrote this book called God's Devil. And it kind of shows in the book, like, if you read the book of Job, when Satan has to go to God to ask for permission to do anything. And so Erwin Lutzer basically says, like, it's not a war. It's not like a chess match. It's not like God's in heaven. Like, what's the devil going to do next? I don't know. Satan's got to have permission to do whatever he wants to do. So I didn't want it to. I think that what's cooler to honestly read about are like angels, like Billy Graham has a book on angels, and those are like really cool stories. That stuff's pretty cool. But yeah, to just like read about spirits that are raping people is like not an awesome thing. Again, not really. I didn't really want to write this book, because who wants to fill their head with that?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, who wants to sit there and read about people who are getting, like, here's another thing. The night stuff always bothers me, because if you're going to like, if you're a demon, like, show yourself at 3 PM, you know what I mean? Like, why do you got to wait till night when everything's dark? Like, come out during the day and say, surprise. Do you got to do it at night? So it's like, do I really want to sit here and like do extensive research on this? Like, honestly, like, no, not really. Like, I was intrigued enough with sleep paralysis, but like, I also knew, like, when I say I didn't really want to write the book, it's like, yeah, I'm intrigued, but again, I don't really feel like reading about this stuff mm-hmm. for however long. So, I did the research phase, tried to honestly just like bang through it as best as I could, as quick as I could, because mm-hmm. again, it's not enjoyable. But yeah, I mean, so that stuff was like pretty extreme, but honestly, like, anymore, like, some of the stuff I hear like actually makes me laugh. So, like, my dad did, like, he's prayed for a lot of people who have like,
mm-hmm.
who kind of, and I have no idea, dude, like, you could be an atheist and think that like what I'm saying is the dumbest crap in the world. Like, that's okay. But my dad like, has prayed for people who, were demon possessed. And some of those stories are honestly like funny. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not even scary. It's just like silly. Like, he'd be like praying for someone and he'd be like, you know, are all the demons out? And they'd be like, yeah, we're all gone. And he'd be like, okay, in the name of Jesus, are you all gone? You know, like, that kind of makes me laugh. Or he had this guy, like, a lot of the stuff that we, like, a lot of the stuff in this country that we see as like mental health mm-hmm. is mental health, 100%. There's definitely a mental health problem in this country. But there's a certain line where it's like, you've tried all these medicines, you've tried all these counseling, and you've got a guy who's doing compulsive behavior that always somehow lands back to Satan. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, could we just like pray for the guy maybe? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that we got to go back to like the day where, you know, you're drowning people in water. Like, that's obviously stupid. And there are real problems with the brain. But what's interesting to me is like, you'll see these people who do these compulsive behaviors that always somehow draw back to Satan. And it's like, that's where like the pastor Neil Anderson, he is like a psychologist. And he's mm-hmm. like, yeah, when I'd be in college, like, we would have these disorders that were obviously the brain, but then we'd have these other disorders that weren't the brain. And he's like, and it just seemed obvious. Like, why are we not thinking about like the fact that we're spiritual beings in a human body mm-hmm. type of thing? And so, you know, like, there's a, my dad had, when my older brothers were like little kids, my dad gave this guy a ride home from church once. And the guy, my dad's like, all right, see you later. And the guy goes, I'm going to follow you home and kill you. And then like shuts the door to my dad's truck and leaves. And my brothers were all freaked out. They're like, Dad, is he actually going to follow us home and kill us? And my dad's like, no, he only has a bike and he lives in Omaha and we live a half hour away. I think we're going to be fine. But a guy like that, like, mm-hmm. like, I've seen, like, I've been in churches where where like, dude, you'll have these people who come in and they have spiritual problems and like they mark themselves out. And it's kind of, it's like in a weird way, it's almost funny because like they just do weird shit. And again, it always reverts back to like God or whatever. And so, To me, it's just like blatantly obvious, like this dude's got a spiritual problem, like he needs prayer type of a thing. So, you know, again, like growing up, my dad would tell me these stories. And when I was a kid, you know, were kind of scary. But as an adult, they're fascinating. And then a lot of the times now when I hear them, we just kind of like laugh about them, like, oh, yeah, that was definitely odd behavior, huh?
Yeah. And it's some of it you just is. It could be just a, you know, just a, it's a chemical limitation that it, you know, scientifically wise, like you said, that we're spiritual beings. So some of it, you know, is just, you know, putting into practice, you know, behaviors and just, you know, being, a, you know, not giving into those, I guess, what you would call compulsive.
Yeah.
To maybe, you know, try to just be stronger than the compulsion.
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem, man, is like sometimes Christians are they just get away, they get a little, I don't know, they can be a little weird. Like I'll be the first to admit, like one of the a group of people who I didn't want to interview for this book were like people who say that they specialize in deliverance ministry, because like people who say that they specialize in that, like number one, they tend to just be weird. But you know, we've all heard the stories of like you know, people who were sick and maybe they got prayed for and maybe they got healed. But we've also heard the stories of like the people that were sick and they would like a Christian would pray for them and be like, well, it's your fault that you're not getting healed. What did you do that's causing the sickness? Right. Like that's stupid. Like that's a very dumb, like somebody who would say that is just a dumb Christian. Mm-hmm. And the problem with like any religion or any group of people, I mean to say, is like you're going to have smart people and you're going to have really dumb people. And so the prayer, I guess, is just that the dumb ones are maybe more quiet, or maybe more quiet. But that's one of the things too, by the way, that was interesting with sleep paralysis, is that across cultures and across religions, people saw the same thing.
Yeah.
So if you have schizophrenia, like somebody in America is going to see something different than somebody who lives in China. But with sleep paralysis, it doesn't matter where you're at. It doesn't matter what time period you're in. It doesn't matter what your religion is. You're seeing the same type of thing, which again, to me, I believe that that's, I mean, somebody could maybe say it's some deep, deep, deep primal level of the brain that's got a malfunction, but I don't think it is. I think it's spiritual. So, like you were saying though, I don't want, when you start saying like some of these people that are having outbursts need to be prayed for, I understand how I sound. I totally realize what that can sound like of like, well, just, you know, throw the doctors to the side and let's just let prayer do the work. And again, I think if someone is sick, they need to go see a doctor and they need to be prayed for, you know, do both.
I mean, every little bit helps is what I would say.
Yeah.
I even just knowing that people, you know, that maybe you don't have a great relationship with or that you don't even know, maybe have some level of caring for you, because I feel some of it, you know, we're pack animals at the end of the day. You know, we're a community driven society, and there's a lizard brain desire to be accepted by a group of people.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much those negative thoughts and things go away when you're just either doing chopping vegetables or doing something, you know, or doing something for somebody else. Like it, you notice that you don't feel depressed when you're wrapping a gift for somebody.
Yeah.
It's a good point. It's that feeling of being in a community. And sometimes, you know, just the prayer or just service or, you know, just having a gathering, a potluck, a church sale, or, you know, a Halloween gathering, so anything.
Yeah.
It's just that feeling of community and being, you know, feel like you're part of it, not just an outsider looking in. Because it's at the end of the day, it's a survival instinct. It's not a treatable condition. It's a survival instinct. Depression is your body telling you you're in danger. And
yeah.
That's just always, you know, it's one of those things that it's a primitive behavior that we just can't shake. We, you know, we've got to, you know, all belong, you know, try to find our own tribe of people and, you know, our congregation, our group, our, you know, our work buddies, our, you know, our family. There's all of these different, you know, groups that we can belong to and be acknowledged by. And if once you start isolating yourself, that's when you start to.
Yeah. 100%. Do you ever have you ever read up on like anything, any like evolutionary psychology?
Not yet. I have a ton of books I have yet to read because I go and do stand up most nights and then I come home and sleep. And so my reading time is severely cut down.
Oh, yeah. I think you would like it. I mean, like, I really am interested in like in that just evolutionary psychology about why a lot of the things that we do, you know, we've learned over time. I was talking to somebody about this once and they're like, wait, hold on. Do you believe in evolution? And I'm like, No, I don't. I do believe like in the Adam and Eve story. And they're like, oh, because you're talking about like evolutionary psychology. I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm still allowed to like science. Like, yeah. I still think science is a real thing. You know what I mean? Like how human behaviors evolve over time. Like that's an obvious thing, but yeah, you start to realize like how many, like there's a lot of, honestly, speaking of this too, like with demon stuff, I read somewhere once, and this could just be like BS, but like how, shadowy type figures or whatever, are like scary to people regardless. And it's like, we know why we're afraid of heights. It's from, you know, living in, you know what I mean? From like being in trees or whatever and being afraid to fall. Or we know why we're afraid of water because we're afraid to drown. Like we're afraid of animals because of being eaten by animals. All of that over time makes sense. But then they're saying like certain like shadowy images or whatever, it's like, why does this bother that same part of the brain? And it's like, well, because I think demons are real. I think that that's why, you know. But yeah, that's definitely an interesting science to read about. But you're right. I mean, like we're definitely people that are meant to be in a community, 100%.
Yeah. And so I feel like, you know, some it kind of maybe that, you know, it could be real. It could be not real. It could be just something, you know, a mental reminder. Hey, get out there. You know, don't be, you know, if you're when you're alone. I'm here, you know. When you're not, like you said, demons only seem to attack at night and things when you're isolated in your own room in your bed and just, you know, it's either one, sensing your weakness, or two, it's something just reminding you, hey,
yeah,
you're still one person. So, you know, in some ways it could be motivating to do good. Like, hey, you know, don't forget you got things to do, or, you know, people to.
Yeah. Oh, I would say 100%, like, especially like as a, you know, as a Christian, you could definitely believe it could be done for good because, I mean, like God sent his evil spirit on Solomon. It talks about that in the Old Testament, but it can also be like a way of kind of modifying behavior. I think that for a lot of stuff in the Christian sense, like when you maybe get off the path a little bit and then you start seeing satanic stuff, it's a good reminder of like you're not doing what you know you should be doing, type of a thing. I kind of hate Star Wars references, but like I just don't know of a better reference than in Star Wars when I don't even know who it was, if it was Yoda or Obi-Wan Kenobi, was like trying to tell Anakin, they're like, dude, if you want power, the quickest way to get it is the dark side, but you know, basically you're gonna self-destruct. And like I know multiple people who have definitely dabbled in the dark arts, and you know, they'll tell you the same thing. You know, they'll tell you the exact same thing. You know, they'll say like, you want to see if something's real, like you'll find out pretty quick it's real. But what you're gonna find out is when you want those things to leave and they don't. That's a different conversation. Yeah. You know, so yeah,
absolutely. And so,
yeah, I was gonna ask, or no, you go ahead. You look like you have something about to say.
I was just gonna say I think it's all connected. Like it's not all one. It's not all absolute science and not absolute, you know, spirituality. There's just, you know, there is this balance of life that you just need to keep. And as long as you can keep that balance, I feel that you're doing the right things. As long as you're doing the right things and doing the work and not really, you know, just, you know, going, you know, just ignoring one in favor of another and just kind of keeping your mind and heart open to, you know.
Yeah. Dude, that balance is exactly it. Like, I got a friend of mine who goes to my church who he's actually a stand-up comedian. He's been on some, he's been on some like some TV shows that are definitely like well known. Grew up around some people that are in Hollywood and stuff like that now. And we're having dinner with another friend of mine. He's a touring musician. He's a Christian artist. And we're all eating and hanging out afterwards after his show. And the comedian guy was like, we were just kind of talking about, he's saying, I'm trying to figure out the balance of like how to be a good comedian and be like a good Christian comedian too. And the musician was like, I just think you be yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think that you have to be yourself. And that's how like that's kind of how like this book is, like the balance thing with what you had said is like true. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't feel like this. I don't feel a need when I create art to like, I have to go show everybody what my beliefs are and impose them. Mm-hmm. My beliefs just shine through because that's who I am. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's the world that I'm living in. And so like this, the prison book that I'm wanting to write, and I'm trying to keep, I'll say that it's a prison book. I'm trying to keep as like few details in it as possible. But like, you know, I was like talking to some people about, hey, here's what I'm thinking about next. Here's kind of what I'm thinking. Let me know what you think. Cause I like to kind of bounce ideas off of people. And I was saying, you know, on this character, he's going to go to a men's Bible study in the prison. And it's actually not for any religious purpose. It's because, it's for something totally like non-religious. Like I need this character to survive in this environment. And like, here's how I'm doing it. And here's how I'm going to use this to like do it. Right. So it's like, is there going to be some like Christianity in that book too? Yeah, but it's going to be different, right? Like, mm-hmm. again, it's not an imposing thing. It's just like, this is what I know. This is how I'm doing the math in my head to make it make sense. And I think when you make art, I think that you just be yourself. I think that we probably have, like right now, nothing's like will turn somebody off quicker than when they're watching something and they know that there's like an agenda behind it. Cause then you just feel like you're being preached to. And it's like, okay, like I'm not here to be, if I want to know more about that theory, I'll go read about it directly. You know what I mean? Like you're doing some corny way to try to like impose your views on me. Right. Don't do that. You know, just be who you are.
Well, this has been an amazing conversation, Matt. Where can people find you on social media? And if they wanted to, I guess, pick up your novel Sleep, where would they?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. Check out my website, mattbechtel.net. Again, if you're interested in the podcast, bookbrilliant.com. I'm on Instagram at Matt Bechtel, just MattBechtel. And then I've got a Facebook group. I think it's called like Matt Bechtel Creative. I kind of started it up for this book. So I'll be more active on that over time. But I was going to ask you, though, I haven't listened to enough of your episodes to know. So what's your biggest fear?
Ooh, I would say probably snakes, just because I feel like some of your trauma is inherited.
Yeah.
Like you were talking about with heights with your dad. Like, yeah. I think when I was a child, there was a snake and my mom was afraid of it, and her holding me while being afraid of it permeated my psyche. And so I'm just terrified of snakes. Like when I was younger, I was moving apartments and I was drunk. And so I went out clubbing one night and I was literally moving, like my apartments were walking distance from each other, so I could pick up stuff and just take it. And yeah. So I was going to do that one night and I stepped out of my car and this huge snake was just, I almost stepped on it and it scurried to the bushes right by my door.
Yeah.
And so I just sat in my room and looked down through the window to kind of see if I could see it, and then fell asleep before I could move anything. But I was just petrified.
My brother, like one of my earliest memories is like my brother and I outside, my brother's older than me, and we saw a snake and he like screamed and took off running and like totally left me there. But again, like my dad has no fear of snakes, so like he will, when he first moved to the house that he's living at, he had brought in all these snakes because he was working in like a rural part of the area where there weren't any snakes. And so he would take these snakes from work and bring them to his garden because he's like, they're good for the ecosystem, to the point where like one of the neighbors was like, dude, I'm seeing all these gardeners, like I've seen more snakes recently than I've ever have. And my dad's like, oh, really? But I was trying to like, I don't want my kids to have my same fears. Mm-hmm. And so I asked my dad, I was like, could you like, I want Isaiah to see a snake. And so my dad, I let him, like, he had captured a snake in like a giant like pickle jar, and he brought it to my house, and I showed it to my son, and my son was kind of spooked out, but was also like really intrigued. You know, he's only like three at the time, and he's looking at it. And then I was like, all right, we're going to let it go. And we let it go. And dude, I was scared the whole time, but I didn't want my son to have my fear. So I was just keeping it cool. I'm like, all right, let's get back. Let's get back. And then I'm like, all right, I just let a little bit too much fear get out there. So I'm like, all right, it's all good, buddy. And you know, like we let it out and we watched it slither away. And so, I'm trying to not do that, but dude, I'm afraid of snakes too. Like, I think that being bit by them, like, dude, mm-hmm. they'd be flailing around all over. Like, if you got bit in the leg, yeah. they'd be flailing around all over. Like, that would be horrifying. I'd be too afraid to even grab it to get it off of me, I think. I think that's how afraid of it I would be. So,
well, there's a comic, his name Nate Bargatze. You may have heard it. He had an old bit about snakes. Like, he did a military base, and they're like, it's like in the desert where there's a lot of poisonous snakes. He's like, so if you get bit by a snake, you need to grab it so that we know what kind of snake it is so we can treat the venom. And he's like, that's not going to happen. That's not like, I'm just going to get bit more times by the snake. Like, who's telling you this? The snake? Like, who's telling you?
Dude, that's exactly it. Like, I seriously think I would be too afraid to grab it. Like, I do.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. That's a legitimate fear. 100%. My grandma got bit by a rattlesnake when she was a little kid, and she had a horrible phobia. Like, you could just be like, grandma, there's a snake right there, and she would just take off running. Like, mm-hmm. she had a horrible fear of it. So yeah,
rattlesnake is no joke either.
Well, especially back, you're talking probably like the 40s back then. And honestly, it was here in Nebraska. Like, I don't even know how I've never seen a rattlesnake around here, but when I was a kid, they used to say that they'll fall off of trains, which as an adult, I'm like, I don't even know if that's a real thing or if that's just the kind of thing that you hear as a kid and believe. Mm-hmm. But supposedly they come off of trains. And so, yeah, she was like in a pasture one day and a rattlesnake bit her in the foot. So yeah, man. So she lived with that fear her whole life. So,
well, thanks again for doing this, Matt. I will do this again. Like, whenever you get your next novel going, we'll promote that here on the podcast with another fear of, we can talk about your fear of snakes on that.
Yeah, dude, we can go deep on that, man. That's awesome. But yeah, Ryan, I really, really enjoy talking to you. I think you have a great concept for a podcast. So good job with that, man.
All right. Talk to you soon.
All right.
So that was Matt. What a fun conversation. Real interesting to kind of touch on spirituality as well as just knowledge, depression, and things of that nature, and just try to really kind of understand people as a whole and not just try to diagnose just a problem at one source, because there's so many different ways we can solve these problems. And it's always interesting too to see somehow, you know, sometimes your faith-based to try to strengthen your faith can sometimes also trigger a fear, especially when you're at a young age, to, you know, kind of, I guess, inspire that fear. You know, your dad telling you stories of Satan sleeping on a bed, and then you just think it could happen to you. It's always weird what can kind of trigger those fears when you're a young kid. And, you know, just a bedtime story that sometimes can go wrong could somehow trigger, you know, years of fear and, you know, trauma. So check out Matt Bechtel. I'll have the links to that in the show notes. It's at Matt Bechtel, MattBechtel. Also at Book Brilliant for his podcast. And I'll have the links for his novel in the show notes. It's a very interesting idea. And I love how intentional and how much research he does into what he's writing so that he can do a good job, but also do a respectful job to, you know, whatever his topic would be to write about, which is, you know, then this sleep paralysis, and to not just, you know, just take juicy or over the top details that some people have experienced and include them just because of the shock value of those. So check out Matt. It's a really good interview. As for me, I did a couple shows at Backdoor this weekend. Apparently have been, I guess, chosen to take part in a, I guess, television show about etiquette. I play the part of a
sloppy eater, which, according to Mallory, is a role I was born to play. And so I'm sure my mom also would agree with that. And so we'll see what that does. That's going to be my weekend next weekend. So I'll have another episode here shortly, and hopefully I'll get some more episodes in the can. Tried to get guests, but just sometimes scheduling conflicts, just unable to produce any interviews. So I got a couple today. So if I don't get any over the week, I'll, you know, just have next week's episode, and then we'll start recording some more. So check out a show. I'm excited. A lot of things are happening in my life, so I'm trying to keep a handle on it while working my day job, doing comedy, as well as working at Dave & Buster's again for the football season with their football watch party. So I'll be doing that tomorrow at noon. And so I'm trying to get everything done here at 1:30 a.m. on a Saturday night, just getting all my ducks in a row, cars packed for Dave & Buster's, everything's kind of set into motion, so we'll get to work on that. Thanks again for everybody for listening and all your support. It means a lot to me, and I really enjoy doing this as a hustle, as I work through all these different facets of my daily life, and we'll get some more interviews. We'll definitely keep it going here. I apologize for the missed weeks of, you know, having a dead laptop and having to purchase a new one to kind of keep going and working on things, as well as getting then the data recover from the dead computer to get these podcasts going again. Thanks again for your time and patience. We're going to keep this going. Apologies for any skips in the weeks ahead. But thanks again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. Have a wonderful week. And happy October. And now some thank yous for the folks that make this show possible. Thanks to Barry Whitewater for my art and graphics. You can follow him on Instagram at bwhite2o. Get it? H2O, like water. You can also follow him on Facebook Music. A huge thank you to Gunnar Olson for the wonderful music provided for this podcast. You can follow him on Instagram at gunbuns, that's G-U-N-B-U-N-S, as well as his website, gunnarolson.net. Check out some of the samples that he has recorded. They're amazing. He's an amazing percussionist. If you want to follow the show, we've got a Facebook group, Some of All Fears. Instagram, Twitter, you can find us at Some Fear Fans. If you have some feedback for the show, email me at somefearfans, SOMEFEARFANS, at gmail.com. I'll be happy to take those into consideration. Also, if you'd like to be a guest, email me at somefearfans@gmail.com. We can try to iron out some details and get that settled in. Give us some feedback. If on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, leave a review. It makes the show bigger, and it's not going anywhere. I'm going to record as many shows as I possibly can. If you want to follow me on social media, I am at Ryan Perio. It's RyanPerrio on all social media platforms. You can follow me there, and you can check me out at RyanPerrio.com, my website. I'll try to list upcoming shows there as well. It's been kind of spotty because as soon as I set it up, that's when the pandemic happened, and everything's kind of just in a holding pattern. Thanks again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. Next week, we'll have another guest with another fear. Thanks for listening.